Good afternoon. We were so busy upstairs, I think I should have been paying more attention to the clock so we could have had a time to reconvene, and I didn't say that. So I guess we're going to go ahead and start. I'm sure members are going to be coming in a few minutes. We needed a few minutes to get something to eat and continue. We still have a long afternoon. So, members, we're going to continue the review that we started in our last meeting from the department. And I would like to call Mr. Cordy. And I don't know if you have somebody else today, but let's continue the presentation. So a couple of things that I would like to do. This particular part of the bill is separate right now because they've been working on this language. So what I would like to do today is just to amend this portion to the portion that we heard last time so that we will put it into one bill and we'll take action when we have quorum. But again, members, this is just a hearing to review the language because we really want to hear from you. We want to give you ample time to take a look at this. And we're also going to take testimony from the public. We want to hear your concerns. We want to hear your input. So we're going to proceed to do that when we have a quorum to amend this portion to... I don't have the Senate file, Brad, but we'll... Oh, it's 1889. Okay. Yes, so we will do that when we have quorum, but for now, let's go ahead and continue with the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Darren Cordy. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. You have in front of you the A14-0778, delete all amendment. What this is everything that we covered on Tuesday is included in this, as well as some additional proposals that came out of our work with the governor's office on the unsession initiatives. This was something that the chairs had asked us to perhaps carry in our policy bill, since some of these changes had more of a policy impact than simply statutory cleanup. So as I'm going through this, I'll make sure to point out things that we've already discussed on Tuesday, but there are some new things in here as well. So starting with working off of the summary that you have in front of you, Article 1, Section 1 has to do with transportation of young children with disabilities. This clarifies that districts are not obligated to provide transportation for a child with disabilities to child care or to a non-public preschool program that was selected and agreed to by the parent district to embed special ed. Rather, the district it would have to transport a child with a disability to an early care and education program for which the district has expended resources by paying tuition, placing staff, or in the case of Head Start, when the grantee doesn't otherwise provide transportation. Section 1 also reduces the number. We think this is a good idea because it will reduce the number of disputes that arise between districts and families and or Head Start programs over who's responsible for the transportation of students. Right now, the language is a little vague. Section 2 of Article 1 has to do with continued enrollment for students placed in foster homes. We discussed this on Tuesday already, so I won't go into details on that one, but if there are questions, be happy to answer them. Article 2, Section 1, has to do with the post-secondary remediation and data report. The language that is in this document isn't reflective of what we hope the final language to be. We are working with the Office of Higher Education as well as the MNSCU system to develop this language a little better. The way that the statute is currently written doesn't really reflect the current way that this report is being developed and distributed. So I think we just need to streamline this language a little bit better so it reflects current practice and gets us into a position where this this report is getting filed on a timely basis every year. On Section 2, Article 2, Sections 3 through 7, these are provisions. I'm sorry, I skipped Section 2 here. Section 2 we did discuss at the hearing on Tuesday as well, and just wanted to clarify that based upon our conversations there, we did have a discussion and absolutely what Senator Nelson at that time stated was correct, that there is an authority in statute for the legislature to require authority, to give authority to the commissioner to revise benchmarks. Our goal is not to take that away at all. All this statutory language is doing is to request that authorization. We're requesting the authority to revise the standards, if necessary, according to the review schedule and statute. This is how the last several standards review and revisions have been undertaken, including the English language arts standards and the math standards.
Could you stop just for a minute?
Absolutely.
We have quorum now so that we can continue to review this and do it properly. Let's just adopt this amendment, and then he can continue so that we can review the forum, the actual bill. So, members, I need to move Amendment A-14, which is a delete all amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Sorry for the interruption. Nope. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We are on Article 2, Section 2. As I had mentioned, the request here is just to get legislative approval ahead of time to take a look at the standards. As I said, this is how the last several standards review and revisions have undertaken. This has resulted in a process that's not political. We would say that by granting the authority to revise the standards ahead of time, that you avoid the risk of standards becoming politicized. If standards were subject to kind of a political process, it could result in a situation where, you know, legislature is unable to come to an agreement on standards, and then we're stuck with standards that are never adopted and old, outdated standards. The purpose of this legislation is there's not an eagerness or by this commissioner or by the department to change the standards that we have out there. We think we have really good standards in place. This is, we want to set a framework in place that as the standards revision cycle or review cycle and statute comes into place, that there are opportunities to take a look at those and see if maybe there aren't ways to improve those standards. Sections 3 through 7 of Article 2, we covered these at Tuesday's hearing. They have to do with open enrollment program modifications, so I won't go into detail on those in the interest of time since we've already discussed them, but if there are questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Sections 8 and 9 had to do with charter school purpose. We had also covered those on Tuesday, so again, won't go into detail on those, but if there's questions, happy to answer them. On Section 10, again, we're continuing to work with the charter school group on this to make sure that we're not inadvertently having any additional burdens passed along to them as far as pupil transportation. We just want to be clear with them that in statute there's a requirement that they have to provide transportation to students within 2 miles of their school, and just want to be clear that that's in statute. Sections 11 through 13 of Article 3, again, we discussed those on Tuesday, or I'm sorry, of Article 2, we discussed those on Tuesday, so won't go into detail there. Section 14 is some repealers. 120A.35 Subdivision 4 eliminates the organizational and curricular practices report in statute. This report is a requirement for MDE to report the organizational and curricular practices of all medium and high growth schools. That is about 2/3 of all of Minnesota's schools are classified as either medium or high growth. And the term organizational or curricular practices can cover pretty much every aspect of a school. So the report ends up being so broad that it's not particularly useful. We don't hear a lot from districts that they're using it to develop their policies. We have much better systems in place to share best practices among districts than this report. So we thought in the spirit of the unsession, this is something that could be removed. And the other repealer in there is 122A.61 Subdivision 2. And this is just some obsolete language regarding the career teacher program. No districts are currently offering a career teacher program. We have checked with Ed Minnesota as well, and they verified that. And there's no funding stream attached to the career teacher program anymore. So I see this as obsolete and something that could be repealed. Article 3 has to do with special programs. Sections 1 through 4 are all kind of related. They have to do with the Coordinated Interagency Services Act. 125A.03 is a policy and statute that requires state agencies to plan together for children with disabilities. Section 1 just strikes some outdated language to reflect current plan terminology and how the operation of these plans currently work. And Section 2 updates committee membership and statutory language to reflect the actual current functioning of these interagency committees. Section 125A.027 is a policy that requires local school boards and county boards to plan together and coordinate service provisions and funding needed for children with disabilities. So Section 3 eliminates some requirements and definitions in that statute that are no longer relevant to the work of the committee. And Sections 4 of Article 3 and also Section 9 just aligns some language to make sure that there's consistency throughout the statutes. Section 5 has to do with special instruction for children with a disability. This is just clarification language that cleans up the definition of free appropriate public education in order to align with the federal regulations. Section 6 has to do with community transition interagency committees, or CTICs. What this change would do is make community transition interagency committees permissive entities and would create flexibility around the committee duties and membership. This aligns with the recommendations from the 2013 Office of the Legislative Auditor report on special education, and it makes the committees more of a cooperative effort rather than a compliance structure or requirement. Section 6 also eliminates a report that CTICs are required to submit under MDE. That report is duplicative of the reporting that they're already doing under their state performance plan. Section 7 has to do with interagency early intervention committees. What this language does is aligns and clarifies the duties of the 12 regional committees that were restructured in 2011. Just more accurately reflects the role, duty, and scope and impact of the committees. Also removes a requirement that county and school board members be specifically appointed to the committees. Certainly they can still sit on them, but just due to the regional structure of the committee, sometimes it's not always necessary or appropriate to have them be members of that committee. Section 8 has to do with the cross-subsidy report that our school finance department puts together every year. We've had some issues getting this out on time and with accurate information due to when we receive data from school districts. So this just changes the reporting date to you all from January 10th to March 30th to allow us to have a little extra time to get that final data from districts instead of using preliminary data, which is what we've had to do in the past. And Section 10 is a repealer, 125A.027 sub 3. It just we're repealing some obsolete implementation timelines which exist there, which have already passed and been completed. Article 4 has to do with school nutrition. Section 1 of that changes just a word there from regarding capital expenditures to restricted as opposed to how it's currently stated, and this is just to comply with the General Accounting Standards Board kind of recommendations. Section 2, we talked about on Tuesday, has to do with gives districts the ability to donate to food shelf programs, unused food. Article 5 has to do with early childhood education, self-sufficiency, and lifelong learning. Section 1 modifies the language around state-approved alternative programs to reflect that there's no longer funding provided to adults through this program. That funding was eliminated back in fiscal 2003. Sections 2 and 3 we discussed on Tuesday. That's just some cleanup to the early learning scholarships as well as adding a eligibility criteria. And Article 6 finally is libraries. Sections 1 and 2 have to do with library maintenance of effort. The way that it works now is there is a formula in statute under the library statute that has to do with one formula for maintenance of effort, but there's actually a different formula in statute that that we're required to use. There's no cross-reference to that. So what we would recommend is deleting the unused formula language and putting a cross-reference in the statute to the formula that's actually used. And we understand the library community may have some issues with that, and I'm sure they'll testify to that, but wanted to put this on your radar. Section 3 has to do with regional libraries' telecom aid. There's currently a 20-hour minimum requirement that districts stay or that libraries stay open in order to receive this aid. And what this statute would allow is that if a library had exceptional circumstances, such as needing emergency maintenance or repairs, exceptional economic circumstances, or they just had seasonal use patterns where they were open maybe an average of 20 hours a year, but not 20 hours every single week, that they could come to the commissioner and be granted an exception from that 20-hour requirement. And finally, Section 4 was the Minnesota Libraries Task Force, which we discussed at the hearing on Tuesday. And that completes the bill, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions there might be.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy. Yes, we have a question for
Madam Chair and Mr. Cordy. Page 22, line 14, probably requires more knowledge of the accounting practices, but it could you just double check and make sure that shouldn't read the new language shouldn't be unrestricted balance?
Mr. Chair or Madam Chair and Mr. Arneson, I will definitely go back and check that. This did come from our school finance folks, and I'll make sure that was correctly written in the statute.
Thank you. Thank you for catching that. Members, we're open to questions. Yes, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a couple questions, and I'll start at the beginning, which is on page 2, Article 2. I'm just wondering, you're striking the language on 2.22 and 2.23 that... You're striking the language that requires the department to evaluate data and annually report its findings. And it just seems that we need to have a report about how the department is doing. And so when I couple that then with over on the next page on 3.31 through 3.34, you're striking, the bill here is striking the language that would require an exploration into why a pupil is currently attending in a non-resident district. And, you know, and then I see right above that where it's been the legislative intent and actual language that was passed when we revised our standards now has been changed to say that in lines 3.7 and 3.10, 3.13, 3.16, 3.19, that the commissioner can unilaterally revise our academic standards and benchmarks. And what I see here is a pattern of taking away legislative oversight that the people have called us to do. And I'm fearful of this. And those are just the top three questions, Madam Chair. And there's a few others as we go on. But it appears to me that there's a pattern here of putting more, taking oversight and transparency away from the legislative body and investing it in the department. And quite frankly, I find that troubling.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
If you could explain, I think you were able to explain to me, could you go over the process of how the process for the standards actually work, you know, so that members are kind of at the same level of understanding of how this process works and what are the pieces that you suggest we change? I think that would be helpful to give us a little bit of background so that we're understanding clearly what you're proposing to do.
Absolutely. Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, if I could start with your first point on section one there that had to do with the report, absolutely, we think that report is still necessary. The language that we have in here is not the final language that we intend to have. This was some old language that unfortunately we didn't have time to fix before this hearing, but I assure you our plan is to continue to have this report come to the legislature. It's just whether or not it would be the Office of Higher Education that's providing that report, or the Office of Higher Education in consultation with the Department of Ed. Certainly, we think this is information that needs to be out there in the form of a report and something that the legislature wants to see. So we're continuing to work on that with the Office of Higher Education and with the stakeholders as well to make sure that just kind of the way that it's structured right now doesn't make a lot of sense in light of the current responsibilities that the agencies have for collecting data and reporting it. So this language isn't reflective of our intent. Regarding the standards issue, thank you for the opportunity to kind of clarify that. We do acknowledge that the legislature in statute has a there's a provision that requires legislative approval or authorization in order to revise the benchmarks. That's definitely there. What this is doing is asking for that permission, you know, ahead of time. And I think that the way that the process has worked, I believe starting in 2006, but I may be wrong on my year, was that the legislature had set a schedule in statute for when the standards can be looked at and possibly revised. And then as the process goes through and those years come up, the commissioner sets a basic, you know, some basic assumptions for those, how that standards review will proceed. But all the work is done through a standards committee, which includes teachers, which includes various stakeholders, which includes academics, and they really take a look at the standards, and if there are revisions, suggest those. It's certainly not anything that's unilateral. It has to go through the rulemaking process, and ultimately, if there's enough folks that have concerns about it, it goes to a full hearing in which it's heard by an administrative law judge. So it is an open process. I wouldn't say that it's unilateral, but What we're doing here isn't trying to usurp the legislature's authority. We're asking for the authority to go forward and do these reviews as the schedule exists in law. It's not like I said, I don't feel like it's trying to encroach on your authority as the legislature.
Mr. Cordy, I expressed this concern to the commissioner directly and told her that this is an issue that we probably need to work on. And she said, you know, she'll be happy to participate. So I'm thinking that if I hear correctly, you're saying, you know, perhaps this language is not as precise as it could be in terms of reflecting what you want to accomplish. So it might be appropriate for us to have a few members, kind of a bipartisan group, kind of work on this together. So we have a little time here. And I would rather have that than just having multiple hearings to go over it collectively, because it just takes a lot of time. So what I'm going to suggest, members, is that we sit down and just really go over this with you to make sure that not only the concerns of the senators who are concerned about this are reflected into this process, but also that the language is really clear. Mm-hmm. Because we just don't want to leave language here that is open for interpretation. And if it is, then we didn't do our job. So if we could move in that direction, members, let me know if you're interested in participating perhaps in a little committee process, subcommittee process, and we look into, you know, is this language reflective or not? What does it need to say in order to really make a process more expeditious and accomplish what the department wants to do in technical terms and make sure that it's reflected in policy. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for those comments. And, you know, I'm just really kind of going back to your comments, Mr. Cordy, to think that you're asking us to repeal language about reporting to the legislature about the data, the annual report from the commissioner, but you're not sure what you want to replace it with, and you said that you didn't like this language repeal either. And so I just, in good conscience, don't know how I can vote for something that is against what we think needs to be done, and which you have said yourself, the language doesn't accurately reflect even the department's intent. So to me, it just seems like I think the department needs to spend a little bit more time, with all due respect, in bringing something to the legislature that you want. For us to vote on something that is not what the department wants, and it doesn't say what you intend it to say, I just think that's a miscarriage of our duties. And
actually, Senator, my hope is that this opens an opportunity. I mean, ideally, for you, you want to bring everything very clear, and then we just vote yes or no. But actually, my sense of this is that I don't know. The commissioner wants to, if I understand this correctly, I think there is a process issue. I just don't think that this language reflects what she wants. I think that you see the expertise in this table to help you get there. So I see it more as an opportunity. So I hate to be blaming each other, you know, for our incompetency. I don't think that's fair. So let's move on. Let's work on that.
It's not my intent to blame. I just want to be able to vote on the language that is the intent.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Vote clearly on that.
Absolutely. And again, you know, I think we have tremendous capacity in this committee, and I have a great deal of trust that we can come up with a bipartisan effort that really does what I hope you're attempting to accomplish here. I hope. Senator Clausen, did you have a question?
Yes. I'd just like to support the comments we've heard here in those two areas we've discussed. And then also just a comment and support on page 3, the pupil application procedures. I've sat in on many of those meetings with parents, the required meeting if the student's going to transfer. They generally are very unproductive. There's usually been many interventions along the way, meeting with parents, meeting with the student, whatever the issue might be. And this is really a parent's choice. It's their choice to remove their student to another school district or building. And it's just really non-productive to what are you trying to accomplish, because usually you've had many interventions or discussions about whatever the issue might be to begin with.
To that point, Madam Chair, my district was one of my districts. Rochester was very concerned about this, and they actually hired a survey company to survey all of the students who chose open enrollment to find out why. And not every district has the resources to do that, and it just seems as part of the exiting process. You know, when we leave a job, we have an exit interview. That it would be very, and certainly parents are. I'm certainly not under any obligation to either attend or complete or say why they're choosing to move their child. You're right. That is definitely their choice. But it just seems I'm just not sure what we're trying to accomplish here by saying that's not going to be part of the exit process anymore. It just seems to me that it's a very easy way to capture information that could be very valuable as districts try to make sure that they're keeping their students as opposed to sending them out in open enrollment.
Senator Clausen.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think this is more important in multiple school districts where you've got several high schools or elementary schools. I think it's more of a turf issue internally about trying to capture students and retain them in certain buildings. I think that originally was why this came into effect. I think right now when we have so much movement of students and open enrollment, this is really unproductive.
Well, this is so. Let's. Why don't we? As I said, you know, I'm sure that other members have a strong opinions too. Clearly, please note that this is a very important issue to the members, and that you know, our intent is really to serve our districts in the most effective way we can, and we have a tremendous diversity within. You know, there are some districts, like Senator Nelson alluded, are doing, you know, with their own resources, significant work that are best practices, that are good practices, and we need to hear that. So we're going to try to do the best we can to really address this issue, and we're not going to be pressed with time to do something that is wrong. We're going to do it the right way and take our time. So, members, I encourage you to keep this as an issue that we really need to continue to talk about, and we totally would welcome input from your perspective as to how your district actually will receive this. We really need to hear from you. Let's move on to another topic. Anything else, members, that call your attention that you would like to? Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 27, I'm trying to understand 27.9 through 12. This seems to be focusing on calendar year 2011. Explain that to me a little bit. I don't understand.
Sure. Madam Chair and Senator Nienau, the language that's being stricken here on in section 2 on page 25, all of 26, and the top part of 27 there is a formula that used to be in place for calculating library maintenance of effort. In 2011, there was a change made in section 275.761, which changed that calculation. So what we have, our library folks get a lot of questions about, well, which formula do I use? Do I use the one that's here in 134, or do I use the one that's in 275? And it's the one that's in 275 that is controlling. The statutes have just never been updated to it. So our suggestion was, to strike the old formula, create a cross-reference to the new formula, and just so it's clear to everybody. As I said, I think the library folks may have some concerns with that approach, but that was our intent with the language.
Any other questions? Senator Nina.
Well, the part that it starts out with for calendar year 2011 and later, but it ends with specificity for just calendar year 2011. Is that a typo, or am I just not reading this correctly?
Madam Chair, Senator Nienau, what I think the formula calculation that's done in 275 for the calendar year 2011 is what the maintenance of effort level is then set at.
Are you good enough? Senator Nance.
I have a few other questions, but one on this point. I would want to see how this change would affect the libraries in my district. For instance, I notice something is reduced regarding looking at taconite aid. And so I would think that libraries, particularly in certain districts, would want to know, how is this formula change going to affect the libraries? And so we're kind of, I would feel like I'm kind of voting on kind of a blind formula change here. And so I'm just wondering, do you have some runs as far as how this formula change is going to affect different libraries? That would be helpful for us to see.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, the change actually occurred in 2011. So the maintenance of effort levels that exist have been set since then. So this wouldn't change that at all. It's just, cleaning up the language to tell you, this is how the maintenance of effort is calculated. It's not the way that it's written out here in section 134. But certainly, we could take a look, and I know the library folks probably have this information maybe at ready, but on how the change in 2011 affected districts. But this isn't intended to change how current maintenance of effort is calculated. It's just clarifying that this is the formula that's used and not the old formula.
I'll look forward to the library's testimony on that.
Any other questions, members? Want to repeat, we're going to open to the public right now. We will have, because we've had ample of, I have dedicated two meetings out of our very few meetings we have to these bills, so we've had ample opportunity to review, see this. You need to let me know, and the next time we will take action on this, we will have a much more restricted time. We'll go through amendments, whatever we need to do, in order to take care of your concerns. So any other questions? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm on page 13, Mr. Cordy, and I'm wondering, I'm on page 13, lines 2.2, 2.3, and 2.4, and I'm wondering about with the accompanying funding sources. So is there going to be a fiscal note with this, and what would that be?
Madam
Cordy.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, if you flip back to the bottom of page 11, There is a definition that's stricken there, and in that definition it talks about accompanying funding sources. Okay. And so really it's just consolidating the two into one definition.
Thank you. I understand that. And I have one other question, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Actually, I guess two. One, I noticed a number of the changes had to do with special education, and I'm wondering if PACER is going to weigh in today on how these changes affect our service to our special education students. So I'm hoping there's someone in the room that can address these changes. And then lastly, Madam Chair, my last question has to do with the cross-subsidy report and changing the timeline on that. That's on page 19, line 19.9. I'd like to know, I know it's always difficult for school districts to come up with their budgets and the timeliness that they need, and I'm just wondering how changing the timeline on this cross-subsidy report will affect the school district's ability to set their budgets within the time constraints that they have.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, certainly that's something that if districts are concerned about that, you know, we haven't heard that, but that may be something that needs to be considered. The issue that we run into is that with the January 10th date, we don't have the best data available for them to use. And so it's, do you get it to them early with preliminary data or a little later with the full data? I mean, I think it's our school finance folks are very meticulous, would like to use the best data available. But if that's not, if that timeline doesn't work for school districts, then that's something that we can be flexible on here.
My final question.
Senator Nelson.
That is my overall question. Has this been published enough then so that you've been able to hear from the school districts or from PACER or from the libraries? And maybe we'll get to hear from them today too, Madam Chair.
I hope so. We've had 2 weeks now, so
okay.
They should be here.
Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, this was introduced on the first day of session, but we have kind of sent it out to stakeholders ahead of time. You know, we run into the issue with most, you know, all these things need to be approved by the governor's office. So it never comes to you all as early as we would like it to, but we've done our best to reach out. But, you know, that's part of the committee process, too, is to hear if there's things that we haven't already heard, we can take those into consideration. My understanding is that the bill's being laid over. It's not leaving the committee at this point, so I think we have some time if things come up.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy and Madam
Thank
Chair.
You.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. And, in fact, the department has been very open and very clear about their desire to have input from the community, and they have been very diligent with our committee and with my office in requesting that we do this as early as possible. They had a meeting that they invited all members to attend here, I think about 3 weeks ago before session started. And so that language, some of the language became public then. We had last week, we have this week. So we're doing the best we can to get this information and this language out to the communities, to the districts, of course, in particular, as diligently as we possibly can. So it's at that point really is the responsibility of the different organizations and the different groups that represent our stakeholders. So thank you, Mr. Cordy, for getting this to us as fast as we requested. I know that we put a tremendous amount of pressure on the staff and you to give us this language, but as you can tell, this is something that obviously we want to have input on, and so we wanted to have it as early as possible to kind of start this conversation. So thank you for accommodating our request. Any other questions, members? Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Cordy, and
thank
if you,
Madam
could
Chair.
Be around to respond to questions, we're going to open the forum to the public so that we feel welcome to come and testify, provide your input and your questions, and our staff will be attentive so that we can collect your concerns and work with the department to figure out a response and with the different members. Make sure you introduce yourselves since we don't have your name in the agenda, to make sure that we have your name and your input on record.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Elaine Keefe, and I represent the Minnesota Library Association, and we are very opposed to the repeal of the library maintenance of effort language that's in this delete all amendment. a little bit of background, library maintenance of effort has always been under the jurisdiction of the Education Committee. However, in 2011, the omnibus tax bill included a sweeping provision that reduced all maintenance of effort requirements for cities and counties to 90% of the amount that had been required for 2011 and then froze it into perpetuity at that level. And for us, this was a real blow. We were very disappointed to see this go through. We had hoped that eventually we would be able to get that freeze lifted and return to the law as it was prior to that 2011 action. And so if the concern is that it's confusing, we would prefer to get rid of the tax committee amendment and keep the language that is in Chapter 134. It's going to be hard, if this is repealed, it's going to be very hard for us to rebuild it someday. This was just made public yesterday, and we had not seen it in advance. I have let Mr. Cordy know that the library community feels like a bomb has been dropped on us. He has pledged to work with us, and we are certainly going to take him up on that offer. But I want the committee to know that this is very controversial for us. So in terms of the other library provisions, we do support the provision, and we had not seen this before, but we had actually suggested it a while back, providing some flexibility on the 20-hour-a-week minimum in order to receive regional library telecommunications aid. And the last thing is we had previously seen the library task force language. It was in the earlier draft that Mr. Cordy circulated to stakeholders maybe 10 days ago or so, and we're very interested in the task force. I know, Madam Chair, at the hearing on Tuesday, you had asked Mr. Cordy to come back with some more specific language describing the charge to the task force, and I let Mr. Cordy know that we would like some input into that, and he said he'd be happy to work with us. Just so you know, one issue that we're very interested in pursuing through the task force is the issue of ebook pricing. Publishers charge libraries many, many times more than they do the general public to buy an ebook. And so that's become a big issue for public libraries across the country. There are still a handful of publishers that won't even sell ebooks to libraries at all. And so we'd love to work on that issue as part of that task force. And MDE seems receptive to that idea, so we're happy about that.
Thank you, Ms. Keough. Wanted to ask if could you provide a brief written statement about the couple of issues that you would like to us to address, and obviously you will be working directly with the department, but I think it would be good for us to have that on record just to make sure that we address that and try to ask members, because they probably will hear from their library the library representatives the concerns, so it will be good for them to have that statement so that they can talk about, you know, how we will address it. So we'll appreciate to have some kind of written testimony from you.
I'd be happy to provide that, Madam Chair, and thank you. I also represent the PACER Center, and Senator Nelson said she wanted to hear about that. So I don't know if there are any other comments or questions about libraries.
Members, do you have any questions for the testifier on libraries? Yes, go ahead.
So, Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Elaine Keefe, and I represent the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, which is a coalition of a number of disability advocacy organizations. The PACER Center is one of those and the largest member of our coalition. It's also the Autism Society, Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, and a number of others. I won't name them all off. The draft that we received, again, about 10 days or so from Mr. Cordy, contained no special ed changes, so these are brand new. We just saw these yesterday, and so I have forwarded them to members of our group, and they are taking a look at them, but I'm not prepared to comment on them one way or the other at this time.
Okay. Thank you. So, again, if you do, when you become aware, please let us know. Feel free to send a written email, just an email to my office, and then I will let the members know, because obviously they will receive that kind of input from their different districts as well. So, thank you.
I'll be happy to do that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have anybody else? Please make sure you sign up on the form so that we can. Please.
Well, Madam Chair, members, my name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And I just wanted to speak briefly to the changes that are proposed on lines 2.22 and 2.23. And it's the deletion of the requirement for providing the getting prepared report, as it's known to you and the public. And I do want to, at the outset, thank Mr. Cordy. We've had a chance to talk this morning about the intent behind this language and appreciate that, I think, as Senator Nelson mentioned, that it's not exactly what they want. It's certainly something we'd encourage you not to support as currently drafted. But look forward to working with the department and Mr. Cordy. But just to provide a little background on what this language, this is the Getting Prepared report that's been produced since 1999. And it provides some tremendously valuable information, not only to school districts and the higher ed institutions, but also for the legislature and the public as well. For example, in here, you'll have trend data now going back to 1999 on the number of high school graduates that enroll in a Minnesota public post-secondary institution within 2 years of high school graduation. So fresh graduates, if you will. The number that need remedial courses when they enroll in a public post-secondary, by subject, how many courses they need. You also get it by the institution, two-year, four-year, MINSCU, the U. And then if you haven't seen it, for every high school in the state, there's data on the number of graduates they've had, the number that went to a Minnesota public post-secondary, and then whether or not they needed remediation. It really is a fascinating report if you get a chance to look at it and dig around for a little. That said, the latest version you'll have access to came out in 2010. It's a report that is supposed to be on an annual basis and has been delayed now for 4 years. And there are concerns about the data being dated. In talking with Mr. Cordy, I understand that there may be the goal of transferring some or all of the responsibility for producing this to the Office of Higher Education and trying to incorporate it into the state's longitudinal education data system, or SLEDS. That may be an appropriate place to put it to some degree. But would also like to mention, and Senator Wieger in particular has been involved in the development of SLEDS for years. And we received a federal grant for the to complete SLEDS in 2010, and it's still not publicly available. So while we're certainly open to working with the Office of Higher Ed to produce this report, there are concerns there, too. And, again, this is really important, valuable data that's good for the public as well as policymakers and educators. And it's important to have it up to date as well. So just wanted to highlight that and appreciate the opportunity to work with the department and maybe the Office of Higher Ed and see where it goes from here, I guess. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Any questions for Mr. Bartholomew?
Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
And thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kathy Saltzman, the State Director for Students First, and I know we've had this discussion again on 2.21 and 2.22, I believe, are the lines regarding repealing the report to the legislature. I appreciate I've talked to the department, the Office of Higher Education, about this morning. I think that you always make better decisions when you have this data in front of you. Whether or not we like the data, I think, is one thing, but I think to have that in front of you to look at your own school districts and say, wow, you know, this number of students are having to take some kind of updated courses, remedial course, is something that I think encourages our school districts to do a better job. If they're not aware of that, how do we deal with that? So I think this report is really important. Whoever, shares this with you can certainly be debated, but I think that it's something that is extremely important from students' first perspective. Our perspective, this is something that we see as empowering parents, that we see this data, that it encourages our districts to make better decisions, that also shines a light on areas where we can have a greater impact on student achievement. So I really appreciate the opportunity, Madam Chair, to be able to just bring this to your attention. I know you are very, very committed to making sure that we see this data, we don't hide it, and that we look at, not to point a finger to place blame, but to see how can we solve this issue and do a better job, because that's what we all care deeply about.
Thank you, Ms. Salzman. Any questions for our testifier? I understand that we have somebody here from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Good. Thank you. Ms. Grimes?
Yes. Madam Chair, I'm Tricia Grimes with the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. The report we're talking about has become known over time as the Getting Prepared Report. On recent graduates from Minnesota public high schools who took developmental courses at public institutions in Minnesota. The majority of data used in the report is also now newly available in the statewide longitudinal education data system, otherwise known as SLEDS. Because of that, the Office of Higher Education is in the process, frankly, of taking over most of the data analysis and get reporting that will be part of that report. We will be doing that in consultation with the State Department of Education and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities and the University of Minnesota, but we are actually taking the lead on that report. There is no intent to not have the report anymore. The change really has to do with us taking the lead rather than the State Department of Education. And I will take responsibility for the fact that part of the reason the language is not final is ours, because we want to make sure that we have all parties agreeing on exactly how that transition is going to work and how that language should look. The report will be new and improved. It will include K-12 assessment information, K-12 demographics, K-12 and school district information, ACT scores for the students taking remedial courses, detailed post-secondary enrollment information. And there will be information for each public high school, summary information on the students from their district that ended up taking remedial classes. Our agency produced the first draft of the new report early in September, and we ran into data trouble. One of the things that happens is that data about real human beings is not always neat and clean and tidy. And we ran into some data discrepancies between the enrollment data and the data on how many students were taking remedial courses. We had to do a fair amount of digging in with a lot of runs from Minnesota IT, before we were able to actually track down and come up with a solution that resolved those data discrepancies. So in order to ensure a high-quality report, we did that. Now that we had that data, it takes about 1 month to implement and test. So we are cautiously optimistic now that the new Getting Prepared report will be out by the end of March.
Thank you. This is very helpful, actually. I think that we, when we fix the language, perhaps we should have a presentation from your office, because I think this is the direction that most of us want to move into. You know, we really want to have better information, better analysis of our data. Many times we collect numbers that we don't know really what they mean and how districts, parents, communities actually use them. And we've become very skilled at collecting numbers but not analyzing.
Exactly.
So I think that it would be incredibly helpful for us to understand what is the direction that the university wants to take and how we can become really a better ambassadors for our own district, so that we request that information, that we are, make sure that we use that information properly. So thank you for giving us a little bit of a clarification and your position on this. And hopefully when we come back with a language that is more reflective of the direction that needs to be, the language that we need to insert here, I think it'll be great for us to hear from you as to how this new analysis will take place, what numbers, how the university plans to manage these data. I think that would be great.
Okay.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions for Ms. Grimes? Yes, Senator Wicklin.
Thanks, Chair Torsway. And I was just wondering, do you plan to cover all the years that have not been produced yet, or will it be just a one-year report?
Ms. Grimes.
Madam Chair and Senator, thank you very much for that question. I meant to mention that as I went through. Yes, each report, even though it hasn't always been done, does include the years in between since the last report, and that is our intent to continue to do that, so that it will include data on the years in between.
Any other questions for Ms. Grimes, members? And again, feel free for you personally, individually, to connect with Ms. Grimes if you would like to know more about how this system is working. I certainly will, because I'm very interested in kind of learning more about this transition. Any other questions, members? Anyone else from the public who wishes to testify? Yes, please go ahead. And
thank you, Chair, and members of the Senate Education Committee. My name is Rick Heller. I unofficially represent the twice exceptional and apprentice abled. Twice exceptional, as we all know, are now in the gifted statute. The print disabled was found in the Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008 next to the blind. Those are the only two handicapped learners mentioned in that act. Also, universal design for learning is mentioned in that act. I really have only two or three specific questions that help clarify this assistive technology. I believe that's all about universal design for learning, and it was first meant for special ed, but now it's for all learners. One of the questions perhaps we could ask with higher ed is, in the SHEDS system, does it track the blind? Will it track the print disabled? And will it track the twice exceptional? Also now, question for the Minister of Education, if they want to provide some information here now or perhaps later in their draft report, is regarding the committee on page 27 and 28, which is about advisory about assistive technology. It's my understanding that state agencies are not exempt from Statute 16E, which is guiding content accessibility. However, nonprofits are, and I would believe that libraries perhaps could be part of that, and school districts. So the question is, since assistive technology plans are pushed by Perkins funding, which is federal money, how does that integrate into this advisory committee? And would we want to include disabled groups, twice exceptional groups, gifted, or even Jay Wyant from the Office of Enterprise Technology, which is called Minnesota IT now? Because since now we're integrating more about content accessibility, that would be appropriate maybe to consider for people that would be sitting on that advisory committee as we all come together, and including the SHEDS group. Because now I had a lady mention about e-readers. I had heard recently that the e-readers, the FCC, gave a one-year waiver for all the manufacturer of e-readers to be in compliant to accessibility issues. So they're not off the hook. They got 1 year to fix all their e-readers. And since we're all about text-to-speech now, which e-readers do for the non-readers and pre-readers, and I, again, currently have to emphasize that because the American Publishing House of the Blind, which is the federal quota system, recognized four types of print-disabled learners. They're blind, visually impaired, pre-readers, and non-readers. It's my belief, and perhaps more Corrine could help define what that is, but I believe for this moment, I believe the pre-readers are the English language learners, and I myself is considered a non-traditional reader. I don't read silently in a normal way. My computer reads to me. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. If anyone has any questions, feel free to ask.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Any questions for Mr. Heller? Thank you for your testimony. Senator Dole, if you could take that. So, members, I have, for now, we will conclude the presentation of this particular bill. And as I said before, I would totally appreciate, you know, your calls, your input in this process, and make sure you communicate that we, you know, to our districts that we're moving forward, and we will really appreciate their support. So we're going to lay this over for further action. I am going to move now into the second part of the agenda, which is my bill.
Senator Torres-Ray, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. This bill is not a very complicated bill. It's just some corrections, grammatical corrections. But What this does is gives me an opportunity, members, to make sure that this committee actually has a vehicle in case we're having a, because we have some proposals that are coming with a budget and language and policy changes, and then we have a lot of, this is a policy year, we're going to try to figure out how we move this process along. So this bill simply serves me as having a vehicle where that we can move and try to have a process that is clean and transparent on behalf of this committee. So as you see in front of you, this is a simple correction of some grammatical preferences in language in policy for Senate File 945, and that's all it is. So I'll appreciate your support in moving this forward so I can have it available for the purposes of working with this committee.
Have members had a chance to look at that, or do they have any questions? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, is there a fiscal note with this?
I hope not, Senator.
I do, too.
And if it is, I would like to hear the staff response to that question, because my understanding is that there isn't. I think the staff was diligent to research that, but if there is, I want to make sure I know right away, because that's certainly not the intent, Senator. So I don't know if the staff can respond to that. I know Mr.
Senator Torres-Ray, I think Mr. Arneson shook his head no, but if he wants to.
Mr. Chair and Senators, it seems to me that unless the legislature specifically appropriates more money to the department to provide such assistance, any additional assistance provided would be obtained out of the department's existing budget.
Senator Nelson?
Just from a point of reference, I think it's a good idea to get the department on board that they are okay with this without a fiscal note, because sometimes we do get those fiscal notes that say it's going to require one more FTE to do this or that. And I agree
absolutely.
With you. It's good to know right up front.
Yeah, absolutely.
No
absolutely. And
note.
Thank you, Senator Nelson, for asking that question, because I certainly don't want to, you know, put forward a bill that is supposed to be a very simple concept and be caught in a situation where I hear that there's a huge fiscal note attached to it. So I will make sure that I will get a written response from the department to make sure that we don't have, because that's certainly not the intent.
It's a very good bill. Thank you.
Does anybody else have a question? If not, we'll allow you to make a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I move that Senate File 945 be recommended to pass and move to the floor.
Motion has been made that Senate File 945 be passed and move to the floor. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you can dismiss the committee. Well, that'll be fine.
Looks like if there's no other business, meeting adjourned. Thank you.